The Choma Aminim is a piyut, a liturgical poem that is about 1,500 years old. It was written, we believe, by one of the earliest of our liturgical poets, Yanai, who lived in the land of Israel sometime between the 5th and 7th centuries. He writes many, many of these piyutim. Several of them found their way into our High Holiday Machzor, our High Holiday Prayer Books, as well as other collections and for other Hagim and times of year that we have. And in this particular piyut, this poem, we see that there is a double alphabetical acrostic in couplets. The first line states an attribute of God, and then the second line uses that same letter of the alphabet to describe something of our human perspective of the divine within relationship to that quality attribute that was described in the first line. It goes through the entire Aleph Bet, and it is placed into the early prayer, the third prayer of our Musaf Amidah on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So likely you saw these words, perhaps you sung these words just last week, and then tomorrow again, we will revisit them in our machzor, in shul, in our davening. Now, I want to, before we jump into the words themselves and diving into the intertextuality, the places where Yanai gets inspiration from Tanakh, from the Bible, as well as from the rabbinic tradition in putting together these couplets from the Aleph Bet, I want us to think about a couple of things. First of all, what might it mean that this piyut is written for the High Holidays? As we go through these words, think about in what ways does this resonate with the themes, the moods of the High Holidays? In which ways does this help or assist your tefillah, your experience of prayer in the High Holidays? To what extent does this challenge your tefillah, your prayer on these days? And I want, in looking at that, to also zoom out and think about what we are doing in our tefillah. We say a lot of words. We are in shul for many hours tonight and tomorrow, and last week as well. There is so much going on in our tefillah that I want us to take this moment when we're looking through this piyut to pause, to breathe, and to actually have a perspective on this tefillah, on this piyut, that allows us to be fully honest, allows us to come to our tefillah experience this Yom Kippur, not just to recite the words, word after word, word after word, enjoy the melodies, enjoy the community, but actually think about how do these words resonate, challenge, uplift, hold us, in the words of the piyutim and the tefillah itself. And many of these different tefillot that we have come in with slightly different ideas, different emotions, different strength, and also they can resonate very differently for us. And I want to recognize that not all of the words of tefillah feel like we can say them every time we visit them with the same heart, with the same mind, with the same presence. Sometimes it is harder to say the words of tefillah than others. And those can be the same words in different days, in different years, depending on where we are coming from, depending on the world that we are living in. And I recognize that for many people, also the different images of God and language of God. This piyut is one line after the next talking about qualities of God. And how does that land for us? How does that land for our relationship with God? How does that land for our understanding of God in this moment, this Yom Kippur, this High Holiday season that we are in right now? And in order to help us think about that, I want to offer a rubric, perhaps, a way of understanding different ways that the tefillah might, and this piyut might land with us. And for that, I'm going to give gratitude to my colleague and friend, Rabbi Akiva Mattinson, who offers four models of truthfulness, honesty, and presence in relationship to the words, the tefillah that we say. He gives four ideas. One way, the first way that we might approach challenging language and concepts in tefillah, he calls it the brutal truth. Is this language, is this tefillah, these words, actually how we believe the world is, even if that really challenges us, even if that is very hard for us? But in some way, we feel it as true. The second idea of the four is this idea he calls making it true, reinterpreting language and re-envisioning the world. We might understand this as the pshat of the words of this tefillah, the plain contextual meaning of these words are very challenging for me, and I need to make them true either by reinterpreting the words so that they fit a reality that feels right to me, or can we re-envision the world in a way that feels honest and true and then aligns with the words we are saying? A third option is what he calls not yet fully true, standing between this world and the world to come. In this mode, we look at the words of our piyutim, of our tefillah, that challenge us, and daven, pray, believe that these words will be true at some time, perhaps not today. Perhaps it's something we envision for the distant future, for the world to come, where these words will be true. There are many rabbinic texts that talk about how we say the words today in a future perspective of something that we pray will be true, even if we don't find them true today. And the fourth one he suggests is a sense of make-believe. He doesn't mean that in a sense of lying, but as prayer, he says, as a transitional space. What does it mean to come into a mindset where this is true? How would our lives look? How would our world look? How might we walk through the world and approach the people in the world in a different way in the vision of these words being true? So I want us to look at the words of this piyut, V'chol ma'aminim, and think deeply and honestly, where does it land for us? In what ways are these piyut, is this piyut falling within a rubric of a truth that we see and hold on to with strength, a truth that is honest but hard for us? How might we need to reinterpret the words of the piyut or reimagine the world such that the words hold true? How might we be davening this and reading these words in a aspirational mode, that one day these words will be true and it will fit with the world? Or how do we move our whole mindset into a mode of making belief as true, and how that would change how these words land with us and how we come to them in prayer? I also want to think about, as we look through these words, in what ways are we ascribing these attributes to God? In what way are we recognizing these attributes of God in the world? And at the same time, in what way, in a mode of imitatio Dei, in a mode of lalechet bechol derachav, of us human beings being created within God's image, moving into God's likeness and walking in God's ways, hoping, praying that we ourselves can take on these attributes in ways that are meaningful and true and holy. That's our framing for coming into this piyut, the Chol Ma'aminim, today. We're going to turn now, if we can share our source sheet on the screen. Feel free to look on the source sheet that you have here being shared. And by our moderator, Esther, thank you so much for helping us out today. Or be in the source sheet on your own, in your own screen. But we're going to scroll down to right under the piyut itself on page 3 in the middle of the page. And we're going to start here by looking at the first couplet. Now, just to orient yourselves to this page here, it might look a little bit different than some other source sheets that you are used to, but I've laid out a rubric on each of these couplets that goes between, and the top in bold, we have the particular couplet we're looking at. Here, it's the first couplet. And then we have in the matrix, a source, either biblical or rabbinic, of some phrase or idea from the couplet. The text of that source, then going from left to right, we have the text, then we have a context that the source comes from, and then a connection in some ways to the theme of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, the High Holiday. So here we see that first couplet, Ochez biyad midat mishpat, whose hand holds the attribute of justice, v'chol ma'aminim shehu el emunah, and all believe that God is faithful, that God is loyal. Some of these ideas here in this couplet, it's very interesting. Yanai zooms into the calendrical Torah reading calendar to begin his piyut. This comes from Devarim 32, which is the chapter of Parshat Ha'azinu, which we just read in Shul. It comes in this time of the calendar every year. And that's where he starts. He brings together our holiday calendar together with our Torah reading calendar and zooms into God's relationship with the Jewish people. And in that chapter of Deuteronomy, we see toward the end of that chapter, as this is Moshe's final speech to the people, he's about to go up to the mountain, look over to the land, and God, and die, and God's going to bury him. And God talks about God's relationship to the people and to the people's enemies. And God, and it said, "Im shanoti barach harbi v'tochez b'mishpat yadi ashiv nekom letzarai m'sanai ashalem." When I sharpen, when I whet my flashing blade, and my hand lays hold on judgment, vengeance will I wreak on my enemies, will I deal to those who reject me. It's a very powerful, strong, violent in some way image. God holding on to judgment and taking the blade and wreaking havoc on those who don't follow God. But let's see what the rabbis do with this in Shmot Rabbah, and perhaps what that does to Yanai's putting it in this verse. So yes, it definitely presents God as an ultimate ruler, the decider of life and death, holding judgment in the fate of humanity, but also, how does it come to as a sign of protection or as a sign of restraint? In Shmot Rabbah, we're in the second box now. Amar la makadosh baruch hu Yisrael. God said to Israel, "Kishem shani yachol le'avor et hadin al ovdei kochavim, ve'ani eini me'avir ela tofes ani badin." Just as I am able to pass over judgment on the Gentiles, but I do not pass over, Rather, I grasp hold of judgment. So too, kach atem lo tetu chutz ladin. So too, you shall not fall outside the scope of judgment. Now, there are actually two ways of reading this Shmot Rabbah. There are two ways of reading how they are reading into this verse. Is it that, option one, just as God is deciding who to lay down the law with and who to hold off judgment on, and God does this with the people who are not Israel, but God decides to hold them to judgment, so too with you, don't think you, Israel, are outside of God's scope of holding accountable. You too will face God's accountability that we see on the High Holiday, you'll see. But there's another way to look at it. What does it mean, la'avor et hadin? Some comments on the Shmot Rabbah say that actually, in God's ability to do whatever God wants, and in God's kina, in God's zealotry, God might lash out to nth degree upon people. However, God decides only to go as far as the deen sets forth. God could go farther than what the deen requires, but God actually holds God's self in constraint and only goes so far as the bounds, the limits that God has set. And that is with other peoples, that is also with our peoples. And what does it mean to think of anger, vengeance, as something that can get out of control or something that can be held in control? And is that a quality that only God has? Is that a quality that is hard for many of us humans? Or is it something that we also can do, or aspirational, that we can hold ourselves within the limits that we set, the ways that are appropriate in our anger, even if it is righteous anger, or the ways that we act out? Think about how the rabbis in Shmot Rabbah might be softening this Devarim text. But then there's also a steadiness that we get from these texts, and we get it in this chapter of Devarim as well, where we see another two words, the last two words of this couplet, quoted earlier in that same chapter of Deuteronomy as the first. Ha'ochez biad mishpat, midat mishpat, v'chol ma'aminim shehu el emunah. We all believe that God is faithful, God is loyal, God is steady. And here we see the fourth pasuk of that chapter. Hatzur tamim paolo, ki chol derachav mishpat, el emunah, ve'en avel tzadik v'yashar hu. Hatzur, the rock, God's deeds are complete or perfect, for all God's ways are just. A steadfast God, el emunah, a loyal, steadfast God, never false, true, and upright is God. So here we see, with in context to these other two sources that we've seen, an idea that God is not lashing out randomly, not visiting justice or judgment in any which way, but there's a steadiness to God, a steadiness that we perhaps look for, hope for in God, that we see as a model, perhaps, ourselves as well. At what point do we want God that is Hatzur, the steady that we can be in relationship to, as opposed to the vengeful, unsteady, that we see perhaps in the words above? So here, Ha'achoz b'yad midat mishpat v'chol ma'aminim shehu el emunah, that God holds to judgment, holds to justice, and that God is steady. To put in the chat box a couple of words, a couple of thoughts that come to you when thinking about this first couplet of the piyut, v'chol ma'aminim. And I will look through some of the chats that we've seen here already. Bear, some of I think, Naomi, you're not alone in thinking of all the, what this judgment, this punishment, is that what is happening? These questions of theodicy that come on many of our minds in this way. I think many of us read and see the challenge in that as well. All right, as people are continuing to think on that first couplet, I want us to move a few down to Dalid. We're now on the next page. Hadan yechidi levaye olam, who alone judges all who enter the world, v'chol ma'aminim shehu dayan emet. And all believe that God is a true judge. Here we're going to look at a few different rabbinic sources. And I should have said above that I'm very grateful to Daniel Goldschmidt, who published a critical edition of the Machzorim, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and then his son-in-law also continued through the rest of the Chagim, writing the Goldschmidt Machzor, which is out of print, but you can find still online in hard print, going through the whole Machzor, so it can be davened like you're in shul, but also see in the critical apparatus of where each of the words and lines come from in Tanakh and Chazal, and the different variances that there are according to different traditions and customs of different Machzorim from different rites of the Jewish people. And so not all, but many of these sources are from his work that I owe much gratitude to. So Hadan Yechidi Levay Olam, Hadan Yechidi, Pirkei Avot, from the Mishnah, Ethics of Our Fathers, we see in the fourth chapter that there's talk about what it means to be in judgment, what it means to judge others. You'll see in the context, the one that comes right before this with Rabbi Ishmael. And then he also says in the main text box, Hu haya omer, al tehi dan yechidi. Don't be established or be a single judge. She'ein dan yechidi ela echad. There's only one who can be a single judge, right? In the courts we make up, we have courts of three. We have courts of bigger courts, of multiples. But who is the one who can stand in judgment as one? Ela ha'echad, only the one. Only God can do that. And we can think about what are the ways that God stands in judgment alone. Is that hard? Is that challenging? We often, in the courts that we make, that we believe in, that we hold to, there is a give and take between the decisors, between the judges. Is God lonely in judgment? Does God have questions that God can or can't ask in making judgment that differs from what we can do? It makes me think about God's self, what that experience of being a judge is like for God. But God does this judging all of us, hopefully in ways that are fair and steady. And sometimes we even, at moments, can be appreciative that we are held accountable. That there is one who is looking over us and helping us make sense of how we have been in this world, walking through it, and holding us account to walking through it in better ways. Because that doesn't always come from outside. But that judge, not being a human judge with fallibilities, but a judge who we can imagine, we can hope, we can aspire, we can dream, is a fair judge. And this judge, God, comes to do this multiple times a year to all who walk through the world. As we see in Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, the very beginning of Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Barba Prakim Ha'olam Nidom, there are four times that the world is judged. On Pesach for the crops, on Shavuot for the fruits of the tree, on Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah, Kol Bayi Olam, Ovrin Lefanecha, Kivnei Maron. On Rosh Hashanah, all pass before God like sheep. As it says, the one who fashioned all of their hearts, who understands all of their deeds. And on Sukkot, Nidon al Hamayim, we're judged for water that comes in another week. So here we see that it's not just this time of year that we're judged in this way, but there are multiple times when the world is judged. And there's a judgment that happens over everything. And what kind of judge is that? That we see at the bottom here from Mishneh Brachot. And we're talking about the blessings that we say over lots of different natural wonders and occurrences, recognizing them and giving gratitude for them and understanding them. We see, Vel Shmuot Ra'ot Omer Baruch Dayan Emet. On hearing good things, we say Atov HaMeitiv. Then bad news, at the bottom of page 4, we say Baruch Dayan Emet. Blessed is the true judge. There are many, many different comments throughout time on what does this mean, Baruch Dayan Emet. But here, I want to point to one understanding of Emet. As we've seen above, the idea of Hatsur, the steadiness of God, being Adan Yechidi, alone. Here, Dayan Emet, one idea of Emet, if you look at the letters, Aleph, Mem, Tav, we are actually seeing something that can only be true for God. God's judgment, God as Emet, can see everything. Aleph, Mem, and Tav, the first, middle, and last letters of the Aleph Bet. Everything that there is of the whole universe, the whole world, God has a view, a perspective that goes from one end to the other that is not like any human perspective. A human can only be a judge from what's before their eyes, as the Chazal tell us. God's judgment is something that takes into account much broader, much more, throughout space, throughout time. Now, I also want to recognize that that is something that we can sometimes lean into and feel good about. And sometimes that is a really challenging way and hard to believe. V'chol ma'aminim shehu dayan emet, be'emet, nachon? Is that true? Is that how we see it? I can't answer that for you in your life, for you for today. But I can ask us to reflect in what ways about Adan Yechidi, God is the lone judge, and Dayan Emet, God is a judge of truth that sees everything, Emet as encapsulating everything there. Where does that sit for you? I want to jump down to our final couplet on page 6. Our final couplet on page 6 comes from the Resh couplet in the Piyut. Harachum umagdim rachamim lerogez. Who is merciful, and God's compassion precedes God's anger. V'chol ma'aminim shehu rach lirtzot. And all believe that God is easily reconciled or pacified or softened. I think this is an extremely powerful line. Makdim rachamim lerogez. That epitomizes the extent of God's compassion. And let's look at some of the sources, these two sources from Midrash Tehillim and from Pirkei Avot, Mishnei Avot, to think about this. In Midrash Tehillim, we see Shanu Rabotenu. Mitoch kas, ratzon, mitoch apela, ora, mitoch rogez, rachamim, mitoch tsara, ravacha, mitoch richuk kiruv, mitoch nefila, kima. Our rabbis taught, within anger, there is also passion. Within darkness, there is light. Within rage, there is compassion. Within constriction, there is spaciousness. Within distance, there is closeness. Within falling, there is rising. And then there's a pasuk given for each of these places. And the pasuk for the words that relate to are couplet in the piyut. Mitoch rogez rachamim comes from Habakkuk, one of the shortest books of the Tanakh in the prophets, only 3 chapters long. And here, in the 3rd chapter, in the 2nd pasuk, we see a phrase, Berogez Rachem Tiskor. Berogez Rachem Tiskor comes not only in this from Habakkuk and in this piyut, we also, you might hear the familiarity of it from the Tachanun prayers that we say every day. In the Tachanun prayers, we say, as we're standing up at the end, Berogez Rachem Tiskor. And there is something I feel incredibly aspirational, inspiring, that sometimes I can latch onto and live in my life, and sometimes it's harder, and I feel that's probably true for many of us. In our rage, in our anger, where can we have compassion? And God not only has that balance, but in our piyut, we're told that umakdim rachamim l'rogez, that actually the compassion precedes, takes precedence, comes before the rage. And there's a interesting, beautiful reading on this phrase in Habakkuk that comes from the Radak. And the Radak says that Rachem, mercy, Resh Mem Chet, has the same gematria as Abraham, the same numerical values of letters. That when God is feeling rogez, enraged, actually, God is reminding God's self, Berugez Rachem Tiskor, to remember the covenant with Abraham. Remember the relationship. To remember that which comes outside of this particular moment of emotional height to the fullness of that relationship and the commitment that we have formed with the individual, with the community. Berogez Rachem Tiskor, Berogez Avraham Tiskor. When we are feeling in those emotions heightened negatively, what does it mean to come back to the relationship? And that is what God is doing. When God feels anger towards us, towards people, God remembers the covenant that God has made with Avraham as well. So many times in our life, so many times in this world, what might be different if we can focus, lean into, aspire to God's attributes of Berogez Rachem Tiskor, Umakdim Rachamim Lerogez, remembering the humanity, the individuals, the people, the relationships that come as well as the momentary heightened anger or rage. Friends, we're about to finish off, but I hope, and we did not get to dive into each and every one of the couplets here, but thinking about the ways in which when we show up at shul tonight and tomorrow, thinking about Yom Kippur, thinking about the ways that we walk through the world, and how this piyut, we see maybe what we believe to be the truth right now, maybe what we aspire will be true, maybe what we can hold belief and imagine is already here. In what ways are we going to approach God tonight and tomorrow? What is the images? What are the attributes of God that we believe to be true, that we want God to have? And how are those attributes things that we ourselves want to lean into? How are they ways that we this year want to change from ways that we've been walking in the world in the past into how we walk through the world this time in steadiness and compassion, and honesty and fullness. How do we look to God for being held this year, held softly and held in accountability? And how might that help us to strengthen our relationships with our families, ourselves, our communities, and the world as we go into this Yom Kippur? Gemar Chatima Tova.